B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, we're less than 12 hours here from the end of the game. Sure, there are a lot of questions about the future. Nobody's thought about the future.
Why? Lie. That's all we're talking about is the future. Day three of the Brady Watch. Day three. Keep a running count. Not day two. It started the Sunday after. Day three of the Brady Watch. Okay? And it's a Tuesday, the final football Tuesday of football season, although it is the Brady Watch season, so maybe Big Boy continues. But Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal joins us in a Town Fair Tire Studios. Hi, Greg.
Hi, guys.
The Big Boy is brought to you by Jarvis Ford. As John and Michael Jarvis like to say, honesty, integrity, and family. It's not just how we do business, it's who we are. Jarvis Ford, just off Route 2 in Ayer. So I see, I say day three of the Brady Watch. Before we get into that, should it be day three of the Belichick Watch? Can I get to you about Belichick? Because you dropped a minor bomb there on our postgame show on 98.5 The Sports Hub, and then you wrote something on Boston Sports Journal that sort of said the first domino to fall, the first thing to consider, is Belichick. What's going on with Belichick, you wrote in your subhead. I'll read you pieces of the column unless you just want to tell me what the heck you're talking about.
Well, I mean, what I said on the postgame show, which was, it was a surprise to me, but I had heard from two different league sources that basically said, you know, Belichick might be in play. Not definitely, not that he was out there, any of that stuff, but people thought that he was, you know, in play, that it was possible. Now, you know, now all the jobs are almost all taken. Cleveland's the only one open, so that's probably over. But I think this is part of an overreaching whole part of this dynamic that's going on between Belichick, Kraft, Brady. I think this is all of it is an orchestrated power play. So I think everybody's setting up their leverage.
Explain further. What you mean by that?
So I think that Brady, this whole thing, ever since he didn't get what he wanted on his contract extension, which was like the third time he didn't get what he wanted, Brady finally said, okay, well, I want the power now. I want the leverage. And so no franchise tag. Puts his house on the market. Alex Guerrero puts his house on the market. It's all at least the appearances to put the squeeze on Kraft, at least, that, hey, I'm ready to go. You know, you want to be, you said I get to decide when my Patriots reign ends. This is not the way I look at it. So now I'm gonna box you in.
Got it.
I'm gonna make you make a decision. And then also at the same time, Belichick is a guy who always keeps his options open. So I think Belichick might have, if I was hearing it, I'm sure other people were hearing it, that Belichick could be in play. And so maybe he was hoping that would get back to Kraft where, hey, you know, I could have other options too.
How is the Belichick decision related to the Brady decision as it times out?
Well, I mean, how it times out, I'm not sure.
In other words, let me ask my own question.
I have a theory.
Well, go ahead.
Okay, I think that a Bill, you know, however you want to categorize it, Bill in his camp, leaking or whispering that, you know, that they're, the idea of being somewhere else is not completely off the table, is his way of making sure that Robert follows through and doesn't step in on Brady and keep Brady here.
Correct.
This is what I was driving at.
Yeah.
So continue.
Flush that out. I think that, you know, Bill says, okay, Robert, you know, I've agreed to stay. And I'm sort of giving you my story on this whole thing, because I think somewhere between Garoppolo and now, Bill probably got his contract addressed in one way, shape, or form, whether that was a formal extension or an understanding with Robert. Okay. And that Bill then said, fine, you want me to make the Brady decision? You want me to be the bad guy? Fine. I'll be the bad guy. No problem. I'm empowered to do it. But don't step in. Don't step in. You can't do it again. And so what's his way of leveraging it to make sure that Robert doesn't step in? If you step in, my ass is out of Dodge. I'm going somewhere else.
So as this all times out, the jobs are open now and they're filling now. The coaching jobs are filling right now. So Bill has to know that he gets the call on Brady now.
Correct.
And that it's guaranteed that March 16th, Robert's not going to step in and usurp him, because by March 16th, all the jobs are gone, presumably. And so that's why there's some immediacy to that all being sorted out.
Yeah, and I agree with you what you've said in the past about, you know, Bill, nobody knows his contract situation. It's between the Crafts, Neil Kornrich, Belichick's quote-unquote agent, attorney, and Belichick. Those are the only people who know. Now, you know, I'm sure he has multiple years left on his deal, but that's not a precursor to him leaving.
Of course.
I mean, he could definitely force the issue.
Of course.
It could be like, all right, the Browns have agreed to, my buddy Jimmy Haslam has agreed to send you 2 first-round picks. You need to accept it or I'll just retire. You know, that whole thing.
Right.
So, you know, that's not an issue. But I think that if I'm Belichick, as far as this, I'm getting more assurances than just Kraft's word on this, because who knows what's going to happen when push comes to shove. If Brady really does get an offer from the Chargers that's $35 million a year guaranteed for 3 years, is Robert really going to have the stones to walk away from Tom? And he's going to be the bad guy in that circumstance.
I'm sorry, Greg. I didn't mean to step on you.
But if I'm Belichick, I'm not just – and I don't know if that conversation's happened yet. I know you talk about, oh, well, they know the future. They know this and that. I don't agree with that. I think it's known – let's see, today's Tuesday. Maybe in the past couple days they've met, or tomorrow. Normally, Belichick, Monday and Tuesday is all staff meetings and getting all the season taken care of. But at some point this week, it needs to happen. And if I'm Belichick, I have it written, some addendum in my contract, that he gets to make the choice on Brady. And if not, he's a free agent as soon as the season's over.
Meaning Bill.
Yep.
What do you think Belichick wants?
As far as Brady?
Yep. Think he wants him back?
Yes, at a certain price. Yeah, I don't think Bill will go north of, say, $28 million.
28?
Oh, too high.
Jesus, I was going to say 18.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think Bill wants him back. Deep down, I don't think he wants him back.
Well, let me ask you this, Greg, and this is my problem with it. You know, on one hand, you say you get Brady at a great number. Why wouldn't you do it? Well, here's why you wouldn't do it. Because since Brady hasn't been happy with his contract, he hasn't shown up.
Right.
And he hasn't been, you know, I want the Brady that wins the parking spot. And if we're going to get this version of Brady, where he's on his own time, and you're not going to invest in me, I'm not going to invest in you, then you're just in the same cycle that you've been in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I need Tom winning the parking spot again, if I'm going to commit to him. And so I know it's a chicken or an egg. And I think that, so I mean, just if they give him another low ball deal and he just takes it and this is status quo from the last couple of years, I think you just continue this sort of downward spiral that the offense has been on.
I agree. I think that Bill, and maybe this was part of the deal. Maybe it just wasn't all one way street. Maybe Tom sending the signal that, say, he got a 3-year deal? Was he saying, if I get the 3-year deal, I'll be all in? But if you don't give it to me, then I'm going to be all out. And the Patriots made that decision. You know, I could see that happening, that's how things went down. And it's their own fault. You know, they made the decision. Tom should have, after the Atlanta Super Bowl, league MVP, he should have been given a contract extension of 5 years, 3 years, whatever, guaranteed, basically. He should have. Never got it. Didn't trade Garoppolo. It was a whole snowball effect to where we are now.
Okay, Brady future, Belichick future, if you want. Somehow your special teams coach and your wide receiver coach. And if you could give me a crappier positional group in the league than the Patriots wide receivers, who to a man, I think got worse over the course of the year.
Yep.
Yeah, everyone basically underachieved.
Everyone got worse. N'Keal Harry may have been a flatline.
Julian's just, let's just say, Edelman's just his own entity. Well, I mean, he was fine when he was healthy.
He didn't get better. Name someone who got better at the receiver position. N'Keal Harry was a flat line, all right? Everyone else, Jacoby Myers lit it up in the preseason, disappeared as the season went on. Sanu got here and caught, what, like 14 catches that first game? Remember how many balls he had? He couldn't get open by the end. Every receiver got worse. And this guy gets the head coach of the New York Giants?
Unbelievable.
The first year wide receiver coach from one of the worst positional groups in the National Football League.
Unbelievable.
It's so bad that I look at it and say, that's got to be a beard. Like the Chan Gailey hire. Like, Tell me that's like a phony hire. That's a false hire. That's a placeholder, phony beard sort of hire. What are you talking about?
I have no idea how this happened.
The special teams coach, who doubled as the receivers coach and coached one of the worst positional groups in the league, is now coach of one of the hallmark, landmark, important cornerstone national franchises.
Marquee.
In the NFL. How does that happen?
Well, I mean, I did write, going into week 17, I did write that I thought Joe Judge was a dark horse NFL head coaching candidate, just because of his, he has a good resume, special teams coordinator.
How are their special teams this year?
Brutal.
Again, everyone's telling me on Twitter that the Patriots had the greatest special teams he was here, and I was like,
I thought you meant the Giants.
No.
I'm sorry.
So, I mean, the Patriots special teams this year, I think, were, the punter was great.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't know.
I mean, they made a few block punts, but then again,
the Patriots put
more resources. I mean, Matthew Slater, they bring in Justin Bethel, Ebner, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they put more resources than anybody to special teams. And, you know, they've been good while Judge has been here. They haven't been the best in the league.
The part of it that I don't get is that the Giants just drafted a quarterback. Was it 6 overall?
Yep.
Okay, Daniel Jones, 6 overall. They fired Shurmur. The job is open. Josh McDaniels is going in there on Wednesday.
I don't know how they don't talk to
him. He's scheduled for an interview on Wednesday. And they say, boy, we really like what that guy did with your punter.
It's unbelievable.
Well, I mean, they must have thought there must have been some signal, or, you know, I think the Giants interviewed Josh last time around. So, and I think Gettleman made reference to, they don't really need to get to McDaniels anytime soon because they've already interviewed him. So they know his plans for the organization. And this also goes with the Panthers hiring Matt Rhule, where I mean, people know the way it's set up. And I'm sure Dave Gettleman knows if Josh McDaniels comes in, Gettleman's out. Marty Herney in Carolina knows that if Josh McDaniels comes in, Marty Herney's out. So none of these guys want to put their jobs in danger, so they go with the safe guy, the college guy, the special teams coordinator who's never been a head coach.
Matt Rhule.
Never been a head coach, never been a coordinator. I mean, so it's just
is he a special teams coordinator? That's not nothing. That's one of the toughest. It is. I've always, Dave Tube, I've been a proponent of these guys.
The Tuber.
Go ahead, Murray.
That's a Bedard special there.
I've always been a proponent. Jim Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator. Nobody has a tougher coaching job on game day during game week than a special teams coordinator.
Okay, so I don't agree with that, but let's just put that to the side. I'm okay with special teams coaches because maybe he'll actually be a head coach versus a glorified coordinator that calls plays on one side and then goes sits down on the bench when the other side of the ball's on the field, because I hate those, and that's become what the whole league has become. So maybe he has a chance to be a true head coach. Like, I'm okay with that on paper. Just, geez Louise. The kicking game coordinator and the wide receivers coach and the receivers absolutely blew this year on New England. So that is, someone's got to explain that to me. Your calls on all of this with the big boy, Greg Bedard. He'll also give us his thoughts. Any leftover game thoughts, team thoughts from the weekend as well. We'll have him with Greg Bedard. He's gone over the film. He's got his charts all out. So we'll do a 3 up and 3 down later this hour. All of it with your calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Mads.
That guy's psychotic.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Stop it.
Given how the offense kind of sputtered towards the second half of the season and down the stretch, do you wish you had done more in the offseason to bolster that?
Yeah, I mean, again, the team was constructed very competitively. I think that was reflected in our overall play during the course of the year. Again, You know, we lost four games. Basically came down to last possession. Again, other than the Baltimore game, which I was a pretty competitive game, too. So, you know, I think there's areas in every phase of the game. Offense, defense, special teams, running game, pass rush, pass prevent, you know, wherever you want to go. The coaching, you know, strategy, game planning, decision making. I mean, all of us. Had a couple of things been a little different, maybe the outcome would have been a little different. So I think we all, you know, had a part in the wins. We all had a part and shared in the losses. And we got to try to do better in all those areas, each of us that are part of the team going forward. And each of us did that over the course of the year. So I wouldn't expect that to be any different.
Okay, well, that's Belichick, I think, weaseling out of the crux of the matter. And he had a couple cuts like this. This was Belichick yesterday. How would you assess your offense? And then he was asked later on, I'll play it for you later on, do you wish you had done more to bolster that side of the ball? And both of his answers were similar to that, where he says, well, there were four games that came down to the last possession, which is basically saying we were good enough to be in every game. We could have easily won those games. So we definitely had enough, which is like, God, that's so weaselly. When you've won your Super Bowls, they've all come down to one possession. That's what so many of these games come down to. The whole wild card weekend came down to the final possession of almost every game. Like, that's what, that's, that doesn't.
That's playoff football. He's, but to bolster your point.
Yeah.
If you're a good team, multiple regular season games should not come down to the last possession. Like, that's fine in the postseason. Teams are closer. That shouldn't happen in the regular season. Yeah, that just shows you how limited this team was.
When they win, I don't hear them say, "Oh, it came down to one possession."
Absolutely,
they say, "No,
right.
we worked on that on Friday."
Yeah, that's my
taking the victory lap,
and that's the part I focus on. So you mean the wins are luck too? Then,
like, come on, like, so that part's weaselly. But Bedard, I just bring this up because you blame Bill for the outcome of the season. You blame Bill for the offense.
We talked about this back at Final Cutdowns for this team, where it was very clear. Bill could have made other decisions with the roster. He could have went younger in some spots, got rid of some veterans, traded some guys that didn't look like they were going to have much of a role on this team, and put some more of the resources in offense. But Bill made the decision, and if it worked, he would have been Bill the genius again, where he basically pushed all his chips in on his defense. This is going to be, we're bringing everybody back. We're deep everywhere. They didn't really have any injury issues this year other than Chung at the end of the season, but that was, you know, one guy. He said, we're going to win on defense. This is going to be an all-time great defense that is going to carry us, and we just need the offense to do enough. And it failed. There's no other – it just failed.
I mean, to me, again, and I put a lot of emphasis on the defense too. You know, we talked about this yesterday about the game over the weekend. Their defense didn't play great against Tennessee. And so I look at it and say, well, wait a minute now. If, you know, the offense is something altogether different. If Bill built the team around the defense and the defense failed them at the end of the year. And to me, this is sort of the part that I focus on. The defense got worse. It got worse. You can even argue the offense actually improved a tick by the end of the year. There was a little improvement there. Maybe not a ton, but a little. The defense went the other way. They got worse.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear anything about, well, they only gave up 14 points. No, the Titans could have scored more if they needed to.
I agree with
Vrabel
that.
Knew exactly where that game was and played it perfectly. I mean, they owned the fourth quarter. I mean, they had two drives that really didn't do much, but they held the ball because you couldn't get off the field.
Pretty much when they needed it, they got it.
What did they have the ball 11 minutes of the fourth quarter?
Yep.
11 minutes.
So, I mean, I don't want to say they got 100% of what they wanted, but most of what they wanted, they got.
Yep.
So, if you know, they ended with 14 points on offense, but if they needed 17, they would have gotten 17. If they needed 21, now, I don't think they would have scored in the high 20s, but I think they played to the game, so I'm with you, and they played to the scoreboard and the clock.
I couldn't believe that they came out with their defensive approach that they did, the Patriots against the Titans, because you knew it was going to run through Henry. And I mean, even one of my buddies who played college football, he said, Henry's the type of guy that you can't let him get ahead of steam. So you need to get him in the backfield, get into his legs. And instead, the Patriots come out in their traditional 3-4, 2 gap, where they can just get out on guys, and Henry can get a head of steam. And, you know, something that we talked about throughout the year about them being one big body short up front. They normally leave themselves options. Hey, if we need to play this way, then we have the personnel. If we need to play this way, we can do it. And they go out there, and they have Dietrich Wise at left end, Landon Roberts right behind him, and Wise just got shoved completely down the field the whole first half. I mean, they made the adjustment in the second half, and largely it worked, but by that time, it was almost too late.
Okay, thoughts on the game, thoughts on the future. All of it is on the table with the big boy here, Greg Bedard. To your calls, let's lead off with Ken in the car. You're up first. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, so I have a theory here. So what are you guys' thoughts on the team trading Belichick to Cleveland? Because as we know, Belichick was very interested in Baker Mayfield pre-draft. And that way he goes there and Josh fills in here as head coach and Brady stays.
Okay, I think it'd be a mistake. I'm just going to cut you off. I think it'd be a mistake. I think they should go forward with, if they have to choose between Bill or Brady, and Bill puts that to Robert. He says, look, if you're going to make the call on Brady, then I have to go somewhere else. And it's a choice. I choose Bill over Brady at this juncture. That would be a mistake. Even if you get two first-round picks for Bill, I'm afraid Josh would blow him. Bill might blow him, given his current, you know, run that he's on, the slump that Bill's in the draft. I understand that. I've been firmly on record of this. I go forward with Bill, not Brady.
I mean, if the question right now is one or the other, I don't even think it's close. Like, I don't. I mean, you can always argue for Brady. I'm not telling you it's 100-0. But, like, you know, you have a coach that can easily coach another 5 years. You have a quarterback that's got how much left? I mean, that to me, that's like that's not even close.
But, Greg, you think it's not an either-or. You think ultimately they all come together.
I do. I think this has largely been a power play. I think that certainly Brady is hoping that the Patriots will step up and, you know, show him the respect that that's really the only thing that he's wanted. And maybe a little bit of a partnership with Bill as far as how the offense is shaped going forward. And I do. I think they all come back.
Here's Peter in Swansea. Your thoughts on this?
Hey, Felger. Long time, first time. I feel like you guys have speculated about this the long way a little bit. You kind of need to take your own advice, the follow the money approach. He's got his family looking at schools in New York. They purchased a home in Connecticut. I mean, he's halfway out the door. I mean, you can't beat him, join him. He's happy wife, happy life. That's the outlook on it.
Well, that's why I still have retirement as the leader in the clubhouse.
Well, I mean, I just don't agree with that. I mean, the house is not sold yet. So if he gets what he wants from the Patriots, all of a sudden the house comes off the market. They stay exactly where they are in the same schools.
I don't believe that.
They lowered the price of the house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, but they bought somewhere else, right? And they were looking at schools in New York.
Okay. They're keeping their options open.
I think the family's gone. And I don't, look, I don't know the family, so I don't, like, that's just a guess from 10,000 feet that the family's out. They're gone. And if Brady comes back here, it is the Fricocta helicopter or whatever that he's got a condo in town and he goes back and forth. And like a lot of people, the family's in New York and he works in Boston or vice versa. I know a lot of people who do that. He'd be one of them. Like one of these Wall Street guys.
Maybe, but I still think, you know, it's certainly possible that this was all posturing, and Brady pulls the house off the market, they stay where they are.
No way.
I'd be surprised.
I mean, they're out for sure.
Murray?
I think that they're gone. They're lowering the price. They're looking to move that thing.
Absolutely.
So you're saying, what, $29 million price to sell?
Yeah.
Well, okay. You know, but again, they operate in a world that which, you know, we can't even see.
Yeah, I say.
And as you were saying, it's not, you don't have to look into like Wall Street types that travel from Greenwich, Connecticut to New York. You had Philip Rivers doing it. He commuted from San Diego to L.A. the last couple of years in his big fancy limo.
Oh, I hated
that.
Watching
tape.
Oh, I hated that too. Oh my God, I would hate that. All right, so we'll pick this up. Also, there was breaking news in the NFL today, a stunning coaching hire that does affect us here in New England. We'll get to give you that right here in the update. We come back with three up, three down, and your calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz. Now, it's time for three up.
Dives to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
Nice call.
And three down.
I don't even understand the call. You're trying to go vertical on third and four. I'd rather run him on a slant. With his size.
With Greg Bedard of BostonSportsJournal.com. Three up.
And the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
Three down.
He sucks.
He blows.
Here on Felger and Maz.
All right, final time this year. Three up, three down with the big boy, Greg Bedard from Boston Sports Journal. Three stars, three studs, three duds from the game. And more game thoughts. Go ahead. Who's your number one star for the Patriots in this game? Do they even have one?
It was tough, but I went with James White. I thought he was really the only playmaker on the offensive side of the ball. Picked up some big yards and big plays for the team, but, you know, like I said, it was pretty limited.
James White. I am almost never disappointed by James White. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, he, to me, is like, and I don't know what the comparison, he's just so solid, right? He never disappoints you.
Next.
Joe Tooney.
Of course. Automatic.
Oh, wait.
How was he down by the goal line?
You know, now that he's second team all pro, is it okay if I talk about him, Felger?
For the season, it was for the game. Good point, Maz. How were they in short yardage?
How were they running left at the goal line three times?
So it's one offensive lineman's fault?
I don't know.
You say he's an all pro. He should be able to figure it out.
Who's your second star? Maz.
Oh,
enough
sorry.
Tony talk. Thank you.
I went with Nick Folk, believe it or not. Again, for all the issues they had a kicker during the year, I didn't have a problem with Folk in the final stretch here.
Third star, as you notice, we're ripping through these.
Scraping for the bottom of the barrel here. Dante Hightower, just because I thought he was basically the run defense in the second half. And if it wasn't for Hightower going over the center and just making plays, the Titans might have never gotten off the field.
Who was your third guy?
I didn't think he was great either. I didn't think he sucked, but I didn't think he was great in this game either. I went by default, Brady. I didn't have anywhere else to pick.
I thought about putting Brady. I thought Brady was good.
First half, he was sharp. Really sharp.
So there was the pick six and then the near pick. Neither of which really was his fault.
Right. No. Those plays didn't really
Right?
Count.
So other than that, what other ball was like a pick-worthy throw?
So, no, there's no pick-worthy throws. He missed Edelman on the out once, and...
Yeah, that was yeah, the ball I think was that high was, and wide.
Well, yes, I thought that... In my judgment, that was Edelman not getting out of the break as quickly as he's used to because of his knee.
So that was a sequence. So whether that's Edelman or Brady, they missed there on the sidelines on a ball that was there. And the next play was the deep ball to Watson that was brought back on the Mason. I was watching some of it overnight. That was a key sequence there. You know, they had a good first half. They moved the ball. That was their first series of the third quarter. They had Edelman on the sidelines, just missed him. Earlier in the drive, I think he had hit Harry on the backside for like a good 12, 13 yard. They were moving the ball again, and they had that big play to Watson brought back on Mason, and that's when it really dried up after that. Anyway, three down, Maz. How many downs did you have for the Patriots?
Okay, I limited it and had seven. I'm not kidding. I could have had more. I have seven names on my list. Seven.
Okay, Peter King.
Who's your number one down?
Dietrich Wise. I mean, he just got run over in the running game. And how many times have we been talking about that? That he's not, he's a 4-3 end. How does he fit in this defense?
I can't believe the amount of playing time he got every other game. I look up, and he is grabbing someone's face mask. Yep. He is horse collar tackling. He is illegal hands to the face. There is some sort of killer, stupid penalty roughing the passer that he takes every week. And every week I say to myself, that's the last you'll see of him. Mm-hmm. And he's always in there the next. I can't believe that they never benched him after it happened again during the Christmas break. In one of those games, either the Buffalo or the Miami game, he takes a horrible, either the horse collar or some sort of stupid penalty. It's like every week with that guy. And then this week he got run over. Anyway, who is your number one done?
He's done. Okay, so I grouped three guys there. Sanu, Harry, Dorsett. 4 for 16.
Suck.
And by the way, as I rattle off those guys quickly, you realize that for those three players, the Patriots have given up a first, a second, and a third. And the third was a starting quarterback this year for the Indianapolis Colts. Okay, those three guys cost you a first, a second, and a quarterback.
So who are your three down?
Sanu, Harry, and Dorsett.
Their positional coach just got one of the plum head coaching jobs in the National Football League. Think of that. Who's your second down?
N'Keal Harry. I just thought... I didn't think he sucked. He can't get out of breaks. I mean, they were begging for that pass interference call later in the game. Like, I'm sorry, this is professional football. Get off and go get the ball. One of the first throws to him, he doesn't come back to the ball. He just sits there. you know, when Brady's got a guy in his face. And then there was another one, I think it was before halftime. Remember the throw down the sideline right before halftime?
Yeah.
If you watch it on the coach's film, you know, at first he starts running the route as like a decoy. Oh, like he's trying to put the guy to sleep. And
Brady
then
Brady screams at him.
Yeah,
this
but
is
then,
the play Brady
then,
screamed at him.
Then, yeah. he stopped running.
Yeah.
He got by the guy, let up, and Brady threw it to him. It might have hit him in stride for a huge play, but he stopped running. I mean, this kind of stuff has gone on all year, Mr. Wide Receivers Coach, now Mr. Giants Head Coach.
This is what I'm talking about.
I mean, brutal, really. The receivers, other than Edelman, and again, Edelman wasn't good either. It was a huge drop. The receivers sucked in this game. They were awful.
And I feel like outside of that Buffalo game, the whole thing sort of got worse as the season went on, and their coach just got promoted. It's crazy. Second down, Miz.
Okay, so again, this is my next group of three.
Oh, God.
Karras, Lawrence Guy, Terrence Brooks. Like, Karras to me got blown up a couple of times in short yard. He got absolutely freaking mauled. Guy, I thought, sucked the whole game. Sorry, Greg, I know he's a favorite of yours. I thought he got absolutely manhandled. And Terrence Brooks gave up the two biggest pass plays of the game. Really. I mean, the touchdown and the other third down play, both times were Brooks. I like Brooks, but those three guys were all awful.
Tell you, Vrabel, that was their plan to go at that third tight end. There was a third play. Remember, it was a third and long. I think it was the third quarter. I think it was the Titans' first possession of the third quarter. And they had a third and eight or so. And this was a play where Terrence Brooks armbarred the Harvard...
Firkser.
Firkser. And there could have been a PI on it because the D-back was grabbing his arm. I think that was Brooks. And that was Firkser again on third and eight. That was their plan. That was their plan to go to that kid, probably against Patrick Chung. But they said, you know what, even better. Now Patrick Chung's out. The next guy's even going to suck worse than he does in coverage. And that was their plan. They went to that guy repeatedly.
They totally had great plans on both sides of the ball.
They really
they schooled
did.
The Patriots.
I counted it yesterday, and I'll double check it. Most of their pass attempts went to running backs and tight ends, which is how you beat the Patriots.
Third down, Greggy.
Alandon Roberts. I had him up last week. This week he missed too many, including one on the goal line where all of a sudden he's got his arms out. He's like gearing up. The guy shoots his legs and gets Sony Michel in the backfield. That sequence from the 1 yard line was about bad execution, whether it was Shaq Mason missing a cut on the backside, Ted Karras getting blown up, Alandon Roberts missing a block. If you can't score running the ball from the 1 yard line against a smaller defense, then you don't deserve to win that game.
Jake Bailey killed him.
I don't think he was great in this game, but I don't know how much of a difference it really made in this game.
Well, he shanked one for sure.
He shanked one and then put two in the end zone.
And then the one that he hit was one for a touchback that could have taken a little bit off of it.
And there was another one after that that went in the end zone. So, again, he was knocking him down inside the 20 early in the year, and this was a defensive field position game. Their guy knocked it down. Four of the Patriots' five possessions in the second half.
He was definitely outkicked, no question.
1-4-7 and 13 yard lines. Four of their five drives, that's where they begin in the second half. Their average starting field position in the second half was the 14.5 yard line.
But I will say the Titans didn't score any points off of a possession that started off of a punt. So I understand what you're saying. He was not good in this game. Kern definitely totally outkicked him, but I did not think it was a difference in this game.
Thoughts on your game, thoughts on the game, thoughts on Brady, Belichick, Joe Judge, all of this right back to your calls, I promise, in our long commercial free segment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
John, I know that you keep saying that you don't know what's going to happen in the future. Is there any possibility that you would retire after this last season?
I would say it's pretty unlikely, but yeah, hopefully unlikely.
Before we get back to the phones, Bedard, what do you think he meant by hopefully unlikely? Hopefully unlikely.
I think he's hoping that the Patriots step up. And, you know, this factors into your, you know, you think it's retirement. We'll see. I mean, I think Tom's preference definitely is to be back here. But, and I think when push comes to shove, maybe he's not as open to playing and picking up stakes and doing, you know, the whole thing again. So maybe it is retirement. Maybe it's here or retirement or bust. But he hopefully he's here.
What's a fair contract for the Patriots?
Probably like $25 million. Probably what Breeze got was that 2 years, $50
million? Two and 50, yep.
Do you think Bill will do that?
Yes.
And you think that's smart for the team?
Maybe not.
Really?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it depends on what they think of Stidham behind the scenes and how he looked in practice and prep and all that. And, you know, I mean, they have a lot of free agents. They have a lot of things to do on this team. And the quarterback's going to take up a large chunk of that. And is that the best thing for the team? Would they be better off with Jarrett Stidham and somebody else and put the resources in the rest of the team, improve the receivers and, you know, get younger and faster on defense and things like that? You know, I don't know. I haven't come out on that yet. I will once I start getting into postseason.
Isn't it stunning stuff to think of it in those terms? Would they be better off with Jarrett Stidham? Right? Yeah. And honestly, that's how I feel.
Me too.
I think, actually, now that you mentioned it, I don't think they're better off. I think it's with Brady at a reasonable price. I still think he's really good. I thought this year was all about, I've been consistent on this, I thought it was all about the lack of support around him.
Okay, I mean, I don't think it was all about, I give Brady some of the blame, but not a lot. It was mostly his surrounding cast. I would agree with that. And I would never in a million years say that Stidham is a better player or like right. That's not what this is about. It's about a
bigger picture.
Bigger mm-hmm. picture, sort of organizational reset and the direction that it's headed with Brady.
And it's like it's almost like you can bring it back to the start of the dynasty. I mean, the Bledsoe-Brady thing. You know, at the time, everyone would have been like, Tom Brady, this is completely nuts. We have Drew Bledsoe. But Bledsoe took up so much cap. I mean, getting rid of him and going with a younger guy, but going with a running game and a great defense, does that make more sense for the franchise? It did then.
Something has to change. So if Brady's back, the attitude has to change or the mechanics have to change because it's just he's not getting close to getting on the same page with these receivers. And, you know, so the problems that were there in week one were there in week 17 and it felt like they were worse in some cases. And so there's something there, whether it's the coaching, the quarterbacking, the players that Bill's picking, there's been this, you know, downward spiral in terms of the cohesion and the timing of the pass offense. And unless something changes, I don't know how it's going to change. So to me, if you bring him back, it's got to be something has to change in there outside of just him.
Definitely. Look, the last time they had years where the passer rating and the completion percentage went down in consecutive years, they drafted Garoppolo. Like, you know, to me, we're in that spot again.
Okay.
Except it's 5 years later and Brady's 42.
Back to your phones. As promised, here's Pete in Plainville. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. Good show. Quick, I got a point. I think the coaching this year was really bad. As you guys stated, the team actually got worse as the season went on. And I think in regards to this game, I mean, you know, Greg mentioned the three straight runs where they got stuffed. But For one thing, how many times do we have to watch Sony Michel get stuff? Like, I just don't see the fascination, especially a couple weeks ago when Burkhead was able to break a tackle against Buffalo and punch it in. Like, when has Michel ever done that?
Okay, Pete, thanks for the call. We'll just do those two things. Was coaching a problem this year or was the GM work more important?
I think it was the GM work, you know, no question. And let's just go with this, I mean, from this game, because not a whole lot has changed. I can tell you the Patriots were not banking on Josh Gordon in the offseason. Okay, that just fell into their laps. I mean, largely what you have right now is what they ended up with in the preseason on offense. Tell me, out of the specialty guys, how many of those guys would start on the average NFL team around the league? Would Sony Michel start?
I don't know, maybe on half
of teams. Somewhere. Yeah, no. Somewhere. Yeah, I mean, he would.
All right, let me say this. On a good NFL defense. Offense, a good NFL offense.
I think I
around
could do,
the league.
I think I could do better than Sony Michel in most places.
Definitely. Matt Lacoste,
Even close.
N'Keal Harry,
Sanu is a starter.
He's a three.
What was he in Atlanta?
Three.
Was he the three?
Yeah.
I mean Ridley and Jones.
You know, when they traded for him, everybody was like, "Oh, he's going to be this great guy here."
Not me.
No, this was not a case of this guy being lost in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield and Freddie Kitchens. This was a guy who spent his career on a really good offense with weapons around him so he wasn't doubled or singled up, and with a good quarterback. Matt Ryan, that a highly productive offense, one of the best in the league almost every year, and he didn't make any plays.
And his Cincinnati team was good, too, even before then. So he's always been the second, third guy, whatever.
They gave up a second for him.
I mean, N'Keal Harry?
Okay, so...
Would he start anybody else?
No, not right now.
Philip Dorsett?
No, no. So that's the first thing. If you want to blame Bill, it goes to Bill the GM, not Bill the coach. But both are on the table, but you start with the GM work. The second thing is just your thoughts on Sony Michel after this ballgame.
Yeah, it hasn't changed from last year, where I think he gets what's blocked. It's got to be, and this goes for the whole offense. This offense this year, everything had to be perfect. The blocking had to be perfect. The routes had to be perfect. Brady's throws had to be perfect, or else this offense wasn't going anywhere. And Sony Michel is just average. He gets what's blocked. He's an average running back.
Still the number one issue is that line. Still the number one issue.
Rick in Cambridge, your thoughts on Joe Judge as the New York Giants head coach?
Yeah, so I'm wondering whether he's going there as just a place marker for Belichick. Belichick will go there, and Judge then will become the offensive coordinator.
I wonder that too, Rick. I don't think it's happening, but the hire is such a head scratcher. I felt the same way about Chan Gailey. Like, what? This can't be for real. Is it? If you just want to play with silly conspiracy theories, Joe Judge is a placeholder. I've seen this before. That used to be Al Groh. Like in those Belichick
Parcells
years, wasn't Al Groh like the lackey in some of those things?
Yeah.
He was, I can't remember exactly how that played, but I felt like Al Groh was somehow in the middle of that similarly. And the second I say that, I don't believe it's true. They're hiring Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator?
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what the headline I saw. Joe Judge's head coach, Jason Garrett, as offensive coordinator.
Well,
it's so bad that you have to wonder, is that for real?
Right. I mean, look, I don't totally rule it out because I think in many ways, from what I had heard, you know, towards the end of the season, is that Belichick might have viewed Judge as more of his successor than anybody here. And if that's the case, I mean, you know, maybe Joe would take a backseat to Bill and sort of be the coach in waiting in that circumstance. Now, do I think it's going to happen? No. On the Chan Gailey thing, what I heard was, you know, I think that Flores, who was here, thought the Patriots scheme was too complicated for younger players, and this is going to be a very young team. And they wanted to go simpler, a little bit more diverse.
Huh,
and Chan Gailey brings that.
Oh, interesting concept. Let's actually coach to the level of the player we have in the team in terms of his mentality.
Well, no, but if they want to dumb it down, if they want a dumber offense, Chan Gailey is a perfect hire. Steve in Yarmouth. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, another thing on the Gailey thing, I don't know if anybody's mentioned this. He's the godfather of Justin Herbert, the quarterback from Oregon.
No, we have mentioned
it. Oh, okay, sorry. Well, then, in other news, DK Metcalf sucks. Go Debo Samuel, Murray, you're wrong.
Okay. I think DK Metcalf, if he were here, would be in the same spot as N'Keal Harry. Maybe a little bit farther along because I think injuries are part of Harry's deal. But
after a $160 and a touchdown in that game against the Eagles on Sunday, how's he suck?
He doesn't suck. But my point is this, Greg, that Brady bears a little responsibility for the receiver thing. In other words, I watch DK Metcalf and I just see a big physical specimen who runs down the field and jumps high and runs fast and is physical. But I don't see a route runner. I don't see a tactician. I don't see a guy reading defenses and getting on the same page with his quarterback and footwork. And, you know, I just see a big guy, big, young, raw, athletic receiver going up and getting the ball. And Russell Wilson's willing to throw to him and play with him and not throw him under the bus and not scream at him every time he runs the wrong route. If DK Metcalf were here, what would it look like? I think he'd run the wrong route and Brady would scream at him.
Probably. Yeah, but I do think that he's faster than Harry.
Yeah,
I think you're wrong about that part.
All right, and this will probably be a boring discussion for Felger, but there's give and take with the offensive systems. Like, you know, you say, yes, it works there, and just disregard that Harry was hurt all of camp and half the season, which was the biggest reason why he never did anything here. But, yes, he could do that in Seattle's offense because it is simple. And I'm sure there's a give and a take. How many Super Bowls have the Seahawks won?
One. Well, that would be one.
You know, could they have won more with a better offense? I mean, there's a give and take. And the Patriots made the decision and have. And even if Josh wasn't here, they would still run the same system. I mean, Belichick, one of the most brilliant moves I ever thought he made, Saban tried to do the same thing in Miami while he was there, was they have a Patriots offensive and defensive playbook. It doesn't matter who the coordinator is. So if a coordinator leaves and there's not a wholesale change. Everybody doesn't have to run the whole system. And so there's a give and take. The Patriots think this is the best system for them.
Hey, listen, you don't need to argue. I'll take the Patriots system over the Seahawks system. Agree 1,000%. We're just debating the DK Metcalf versus N'Keal Harry thing and how the Patriots may have taken the wrong player. And I'm saying that I think they're the same player. I think they're roughly the same player. And the reason one guy's having success is because the way they do it versus the way you do it.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not going to argue with that.
I do think that I think the big difference is, though, The where I have criticism with this is you will see Russell Wilson just throw the ball up to these guys. And Brady will not do it because he doesn't have, and it goes to your argument, because he doesn't have that much trust. I think Brady sometimes, and it's just, he's been doing it for 20 years. There's a certain way that he throws to the open guy. If he's not open, he doesn't throw it. He looks elsewhere. Now he's on a team where nobody else is open, so he gets into trouble. But I think Brady would be better served just giving guys a chance to make plays, and often, sometimes he doesn't do that.
We continue with your calls. No commercials here, just the very latest across the NFL, and there has been developments as they relate to the Patriots. You'll hear them here in the update with Murray, and then we're back with your reaction.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.